right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, July 1st, 2015. And this says, before the first cup of jewels here on UCY.TV, happy Wednesday. We made it halfway. It's just amazing how it's, the hamster wheel just goes round and round every day. And where it stops, nobody knows. And hopefully it won't stop, because that probably wouldn't be a good thing. So let's see. It is 68 degrees and mostly cloudy here in upstate New York. Spent the evening trying to get a bunch of things together, listening to the pitter-patter of pouring rain that was like a lullaby as I was producing all the live shows last night. I want to let everybody know, one of the things I was working on last night was getting a show page and archiving set up and ready to rock and roll for Neil Foster's Reality Bites here on UCY.TV. He will begin airing shows here beginning on Friday evening of this week at 10 p.m. Eastern following Brandon Turbeville's show. So that should be a good one. We have now, let me see, there's three new shows that Brandon has brought to UCY over the last few weeks. We have Alan Watt. We have Tim Kelly. So Alan Watt has Cutting Through the Matrix, and he is airing on Saturdays at, I believe it's 6 p.m. Eastern. Yeah, hold on. I'll look at the schedule. I'm trying to do it all from memory. It's early. Yes, Alan is on at 6 p.m. Eastern on Saturdays. We have Tim Kelly, who was a person that Brandon interviewed with, and Tim's got some really great interviews out there. Tim started last week, 7 p.m., following Alan Watt on Saturday Eastern, and now Neil Foster Reality Bites is going to be Friday night at 10 p.m. Eastern. So should be really good. Lots and lots and lots of educational radio. So make sure you guys stick around. I know Friday nights, sometimes Friday nights are quiet, but hey, I'm usually trying to like recover a little bit Fridays. And I know you guys are hanging out, so I don't put too much hard hitting on Fridays. But now look out, because now actually we're going to have some new material on Friday nights, and I think it'll be a fun one. All right, so where do we leave off yesterday? The show was titled Military Test Germ Warfare 239 times on 8 U.S. cities. And we kind of ended the show with that yesterday, looking at how, gee, lo and behold, the federal government did tests without the public's permission, with biowarfare agents on the general public. We were kind of, I don't even know how we spun it to get there. We had looked at all the FDA lies and the publications and this whole anti-vacker movement to force all of our children to be vaccinated. Don't forget, there is a bill. And, you know, I still have, no, I got rid of it. No, here it is. I have govtrack.us. If you haven't been out there, that is a fun tool to see what kind of crazy they're trying to push down our throats next. It is govtrack.us, and you can go under Congress and bills and take a look at what is coming down the pike. But one of the things that they had been working on was the Vaccinate All Children Act of 2015 as part of a federal mandate to force vaccinations on our children. So even though states like California and New York have these mandatory vaccination laws now to attend public schools, I don't think it's going to be too long before something like that goes nationwide. I mean, that seems to be the direction that they're headed. And regardless of the fact that there's faulty science everywhere, and they literally admit it in the medical journals, people are just so dim-witted. I mean, the sad fact of the matter is, once they hear it, regardless if there's ever a retraction, it doesn't seem like they get it. And I've seen this happen a few times where they've reported something on the news and, you know, whatever the first report is. And then it comes out like, oh, we were wrong. Oh, well, there was a change to that story. But no one ever hears the change. The focus was always on the initial story. So regardless of what the evidence is showing for these vaccinations, we had talked yesterday about Heather Callahan's latest story in regards to whooping cough. And now the studies are showing that it is very, very possible that the resurgence of whooping cough was the actual vaccine that was being shed after the children received it that was causing it to spread. So anyway, I don't know, you know, like I've said so many times before, it's not about keeping you and me safe. It's all about making money. So where do we continue today? Because I'm not really sure. I'm still suffering here. You know, I was feeling great yesterday, like this was finally starting to go away. And I woke up this morning and bam, it's back, you know, both in the nose and in the chest. So we'll see. I know one story that I wanted to mention, and hold on, let me get to my page because I queued this up yesterday and we never got there. But this could lead to some interesting things because I did find a few stories this morning that made me raise an eyebrow and go, huh? One of them was how NASA, we talked about this a few weeks ago. NASA, of course, has come out and said, oh my goodness, we've done a global survey and the Earth is running out of water. What do you say? Yes, NASA says that the Earth is running out of water. Now, they don't quite explain how, with 70% of the Earth being covered by water, we're actually running out of water. But NASA says so, so it must be true. And while we were doing that story, I was questioning how, with the simplicity of the chemistry with two hydrogens and an oxygen, compared to some of the other stuff that we're dealing with in regards to this genomics and, I don't know, creating synthetic life forms that reproduce, how we could literally be running out of water. You would think that some money-grubbing mad science-gone-mad scientist would have found a way to make synthetic water, wouldn't you have? Yes. Well, I did a little bit of digging, and I discovered that NASA, so as we're running out of water here on planet Earth, NASA is planning to make water and oxygen on the moon and Mars by 2020. And this is an article dated January 30th, 2014. So just a mere year and a half ago, we were planning on making water and oxygen on the moon and Mars. And then NASA comes out and says, hey, peoples, you useless eaters here on planet Earth, not only are we having trouble feeding everybody? And not only are there all kinds of bio experiments going on, apparently. I'm telling you, I really think that a lot of these never before scenes, this is all orchestrated. I mean, I don't think that's fantasy anymore, right? I think most of us, at least the listeners, kind of get that. I mean, all the dots are pointing that direction. It's the big blinking arrow. Beep, beep, beep. But with all this other stuff going on, you're going to tell me then that NASA says, yes, we're running out of water, and so we're going to have to take control of it, and Nestle's going to own it. No, they didn't say that, but maybe they'll make Nestle the water czar. We did see a while back, Pigman had a video with the water vending machines that they were putting in countries like India, where they could get their daily allotment with their ration card. Yes, coming to a town near you. Maybe Chertoff owns some stock in the company. Anyway, back to the story. This is out of Extreme Tech from January 30th, 2014. So as NASA announces, we're running out of water on planet Earth. Oh, NASA is also planning to make water and oxygen on the moon and Mars by 2020. NASA is forging ahead with plans to make water, oxygen, and hydrogen on the surface of the moon and Mars. If we ever want to colonize other planets, it is vital that we find a way to extract these vital gases and liquids from moons and planets rather than transporting them from Earth, which is prohibitively expensive due to Earth's gravity. The current plan is to land rover on the moon in 2018. That will try to extract oxygen, water, and hydrogen, and hopefully Curiosity's successor will try to convert the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere into oxygen in 2020 when it lands on Mars. Now, I had actually read, too, Mars, one of the ways they were talking about terraforming Mars, is that I guess they say that Mars' atmosphere is full of tons of carbon dioxide. So their plan is actually pretty simple. Plant trees. The trees will use the CO2, and the trees will create oxygen. So how simple would that be? Though, I guess it would depend on how much water there is in the Martian soil. I know they said they found it, but I don't know. But that is the plan that I read about. Anyway, back to this. In 2018, NASA hopes to put a rover on the moon that will carry the Resolve, which is the regolith in environmental science and oxygen and lunar volatile extraction science payload. Resolve, which contains the various tools necessary to carry out in-situ resource utilization. Basically, Resolve will sift through the moon's regolith, which is the loose surface soil, and heat them up looking for traces of hydrogen and oxygen, which can then be combined to make water. So look, they got a little machine that can do this. So gee, but Earth's running out of water. I guess we must be running out of hydrogen and oxygen too. That's pretty scary. Says there is also some evidence that there's water ice on the moon's surface. Resolve will find out for certain by heating the soil and seeing the water vapor emerge. A similar payload will be attached to Curiosity's successor, which is currently being specced out by NASA and will hopefully launch in 2020. The second IRSU experiment will probably suck in carbon dioxide from the Martian atmosphere, filter out the dust, and then process the CO2 into oxygen. If either tech demonstration works as planned, future missions might include large-scale ISRU devices that are capable of producing significant amounts of hydrogen and oxygen and water on the moon of Mars. So there you go. They got a big sucker that can do that too. This would probably be the most important advance since we first landed on the moon in the 1960s. I'd like to see them get to the moon in 5 years with a manned mission. You know, this is sending up robots, but I still need some 21st century evidence of HD photographs of a man outside of our magnetosphere standing on another heavenly body. I think, you know, I never knew about any of that, and I never even knew that anyone had ever questioned that happening. But over the last few years, it's been brought to my attention. And I have some pretty scientific friends who, of course, have gone through all the reasons why they believed that the landing never happened. And I was flabbergasted. Another one of those things that, like, I never questioned ever in my wildest dreams. And I gotta say, there's a little bit of compelling evidence, if not a lot, that made me raise an eyebrow and go, huh, that's pretty interesting, especially when you look at the political climate that was going on during the time of the original space race to the moon. So, I don't know. SpaceX can't even get off the ground to get supplies up to the International Space Station. Number 3 went kaboom the other day, which was pretty disappointing. So, anyway, I don't know. I guess we'll see. 2020 is pretty ambitious. That is only 5 years, 4.5 years from now. But, hey, they're accelerating. We got to get off this rock, remember, because they've already started the time bomb ticking. It says, basically, as it stands, space travel needs lots of hydrogen and oxygen for rocket propellant and water to keep astronauts alive. Water has the unfortunate characteristic of being both heavy and incompressible, meaning it is very difficult and expensive to lift large amounts of it into space because gravity can be really annoying. That's a story, not me. Likewise, until we come up with some other way of powering our spacecraft, like, oh, I don't know, what were they working on? The ion engines I saw, they were moving along quite well. It is infeasible to carry the rocket fuel that we need for exploration off of Earth. In short, if we want to colonize space, we really, really need some kind of base outside of the Earth's atmosphere, preferably the moon, but Mars would be good too. So good, extreme tech. Here's the thing that I don't get. If you want to get back to like what really makes me question the moon, and I'm going to be pretty straight up with you here. Here's the thing. This is America, right? And in America, what's the one thing that we have done so damn well over the last 40 or 50 years? That is to be a consumer and to be a capitalist and to live by the dangling carrot. So if we'd made it to the moon in the 60s and had all these missions and traveled back and forth and it was so hunky-dory and great, why is there not a Disneyland on the moon? Why do we not have tourism on the moon? Hugh Hefner talked about creating his Playboy Bunny mansion in space. We have Walt Disney working with Wernher von Braun after he left the space program. You would think that a Disney World on the moon would have been their retirement. But no, there's no Disney World on the moon. As a matter of fact, as far as any of us know, as far as the public is aware, there's nothing on the moon. Nothing but some old tracks, some leftover garbage, maybe a flag. But there's nothing on the moon. Nobody has monetized the moon. And now we have China and India that are flying missions, doing surveys. I mean, why aren't there satellites whipping around the moon like they have right now around Mars that are mapping like every single element in the soil to see, of course, how much money the planet's going to be worth once they send the unwitting Mars real-time live TV participants up there to never come home? Of course, you know, you do know about that, right? The reality TV show. And they were so overwhelmed with people sending in resumes to go to Mars forever. They have more than enough people to go start a colony. I mean, Space 1999. Remember that show? That was out of Canada. I loved that show. And I was certain by 1999 we would have some sort of moon base. Why isn't there? Explain that to me. And that just, when I put on my logical hat and I just sit back and I get rid of all the science and I just use logic for that, there is no reason whatsoever that we don't have something on the moon. None. Absolutely none. All right, I'm not going to harp on it. I really didn't want to talk about the moon. It's in my delusional haze here of illness. But it is a good question, I think. And I think that the lack of anything and the fact that we're not like, it's our nearest neighbor. It's our nearest neighbor, and we could be jet setting there back and forth. They could be making bazillions of dollars. If they just had, oh, I don't know, the space shuttle that they discontinued because it wasn't making money, because it was a big hole suck. I mean, if they had put their mind to it between the 1960s and the 2010s, I'm certain we could have had a way to go back and forth to the moon and check it out, go on a joyride, even if it was just for the rich people. I was being nice. All right. So, the fact that NASA says that the Earth is running out of water, but there's grand plans just as recently as January of 2014 that we're going to take hydrogen and oxygen and we're going to make water on the moon. And oh, by the way, Mars too. Now, there was another story here. If we wanted to stay on that for a second, but I got to find it. Hold on. I had it open. Here it is. So you know how we've also talked about, I don't know if this is anything official, but I could tell you, when I look at this transhumanist agenda and I look at how they had spent large dollars searching for new habitable planets in the solar system and outside of our solar system, something that we could get to maybe in a generation. They were doing all kinds of research on suspended animation. I've touched on that quite a number of times. And then we even had a mainstream video that came out about it that, yes, we're working on suspended animation. And then there's a project called, something 100. But basically, it's about getting off planet Earth. I mean, that's what it's all about. Getting off this rock once they've screwed it up beyond belief. I see this story back a couple weeks ago. And there was a planet, it was quite a number of light years away. It was called Galice something. It was pretty similar to Earth, they thought. It might have been a little bit bigger, but it looked like it had an atmosphere. It looked like it had all kinds of water. And they're like, that's the new Earth. But it was going to take quite an extended amount of time to get there. And hey, if we haven't figured out how to get outside the magnetosphere yet, that's going to take a long time. But then I see the story a couple weeks ago, and it all just started to make sense to me. So for many years, I've had a fascination with Jupiter. If anyone got to see Jupiter in the sky last night, it looked pretty awesome. And Jupiter's moons in particular. And I don't remember even how many moons Jupiter has, but it's got tons. As the years have gone on, Jupiter's gone from having like 7 moons to, 132. Don't quote me on that. I have no idea. It's a lot. Do a search on Wiki. You'll find it. But anyway, so here I see this story, and it just struck me as odd again, because amazingly enough, we don't have any money, right? Wink. We're running out of money. But NASA is starting a new program on what? Oh, searching for life on Jupiter's moon Europa. Wow. We're going to go search for life on Europa. Well, what a great project to spend money on. Now, if you know anything about Europa, one of the things that you'll remember that we found out a long time ago when they sent the probe in, we were watching Schumacher Levy 9, I think it was, the comet that broke up and fell into Jupiter's atmosphere back 20-some-odd years ago, that Europa is the one interesting moon that they've had their eyes on for a long time. And the reason why they've had their eyes on Europa is because Europa appears to have not only geologic activity, volcanoes and such, but it's covered in ice. And underneath that ice, and I think they actually may have even crashed a probe or two on Europa now, beneath that ice, they think it's loaded with what? Ding, ding, ding. Liquid water. So if Europa's loaded with liquid water underneath that ice, potentially, how interesting that NASA thinks that we need to now send a probe there to search for life because, hey, life lives in water, right? Yes, well, don't tell me that there's not an ulterior motive here. If Europa's covered with water and NASA's beginning the mission. Yeah, NASA just said that the Earth is running out of water. And it's within our own solar system. We can get there in a few months. This might be a quick solution to plan A to get these rich guys off the planet. Because remember, they started the time bomb clock. I'm telling you, it's happening. And wait until you hear now. After I finish the story, I'm going to get into some stuff now that I've been reading over the last few weeks about California. We're in some big trouble, people. All right. So let's read the story. Yes, NASA is going to begin work on the mission to Jupiter's moon Europa in the search for life. Now, we can't even take care of our own lives, but yeah, let's go searching for more. The expansive ocean. Expansive ocean, believed to reside under the surface of Jupiter's icy moon Europa, has been calling NASA's name for years, and the space agency is now officially moving forward with a plan to see if alien life can actually exist there. And, you know, when here's the thing, maybe, yeah, at one point they were like, yeah, there could be life there. I mean, right? That's the way they've always spun. But listen to the spin on this, and especially now when you know the desperation that some of these rich people are feeling as things are starting to crumble. NASA announced on Wednesday, and it was the middle of June. The story's from June 19, 2015. NASA announced on Wednesday that its plan to survey Europa has been successfully reviewed by the agency, and it is now in the formulation stage. Essentially, this means that a Europa visit is no longer simply a concept, but it is a real mission that NASA is developing. It's a planet of blue gold. Quote, today we are taking an exciting step from concept to mission in our quest to find signs of life beyond Earth, says John Grunsfeld, Associate Administrator of NASA's Science Mission Directorate in Washington. Observations of Europa have provided us with a tantalizing clue over the last two decades, and the time has come to seek answers to one of humanity's most profound questions. Dun, dun, dun. Also, there's a little side note here. NASA promises definitive evidence of alien life by 2025. Oh, I'm not even going to go there. It says, Europa has been considered a potential hotspot for alien life ever since the 1990s. When NASA's Galileo mission found evidence that a massive subsurface ocean might exist on the moon, which is roughly the size of Earth's own. One huge difference between it and our own moon is that Europa could potentially have more than double the amount of water than we have here on Earth. Ding, 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 ding. Additionally, Europa's ocean is believed to be warmer than it would be if it only received heat from the sun, since strong tidal forces on the planet generate heat as they flex, yes, between it and Jupiter. Scientists think the ocean features salt water and makes contact with a rocky sea floor, much like the Earth's, and all of these features have proven to be true, point to the possibility that life may exist beneath the moon's frozen surface. And think about this. If we go back to the 1950s and the 1960s and the 1970s of the military bases in Antarctica, of which you guys know my dad was down there, and you look into what that program really was in Antarctica, that was an experiment in isolation to get them ready for the moon. It's one of the reasons why, supposedly, Wernher von Braun went down there, which he was on the plane with my dad. He was getting ready to figure out how to go to the moon. So it seems very interesting that we now have an environment that is very much like Antarctica, with potentially twice the amount of water on Earth. NASA says we're running out of water on Earth. And now we're thinking about sending a mission up there, of course, wink, to go see if life lives there. Now, there's a NASA video here. I didn't see this before, so let's see if we can bring myself in. I'm going to check this out. And then we're going to hop over to California in the West Coast, because if you thought California running out of water was a scary thing and getting pummeled by radiation, well, wait, there's more. I don't know. California is not looking like a good place to be living right now. All right, here we go. All right, let's check this out. It says Alien Ocean, NASA's mission to Europa. Maybe this is just pretty music and pictures. I don't know, but we'll see.
Europa is the most likely place to find life in our solar system today because we think there's a liquid water ocean beneath its surface. Now we know that on Earth, everywhere that there's water, we find life. So could Europa have the ingredients to support life?
we might be actually looking at a body that is presently alive, presently active, and presently undergoing its geology. There is too much evidence right now lying around on the surface, the red stuff, that suggests that something's going on there. Is that an environment that is habitable for any sort of life form? By golly, we really have got to go back and figure that out.
We have designed the Europa mission to take a spacecraft and a set of instruments all the way from planet Earth to Jupiter.
Previous mission concepts were for a spacecraft that would orbit Europa, but Europa is bathed in radiation from Jupiter. Any mission that goes in the vicinity of Europa is cooked pretty quickly. Instead, we're looking at a mission that will orbit Jupiter, make close flybys of Europa, and then zip out of the high radiation region.
Kind of like when I was a kid, we had the sprinklers, and we didn't want to be too close to the sprinkler head, so we would run in and get a little water and then run back out again.
This allows us to have a mission that's many years long and to collect and transmit lots and lots of data. As Europa orbits Jupiter, it flexes, and we could measure the gravitational change of Europa by encountering Europa at different points in its orbit. On a typical flyby, we would turn on our remote sensing instruments, we would image the surface, we would interrogate the surface with spectroscopy, and we would do the same thing on the way out. And we would essentially rinse and repeat and do this many, many times until we understand Europa globally. Images from the Hubble Space Telescope tells us that Europa might be erupting plumes of water high into space. If that's true, then we could fly through those plumes with a spacecraft and literally taste it to understand the composition of Europa's interior.
If it does have the ability to harbor life, how does that work exactly? We'll have enough instrumentation to really pinpoint exactly how the mechanisms would work for replenishing the nutrients in a subsurface ocean.
Europa is so important because we want to understand, are we alone in the cosmos? If there's life in
Europa is so important because we want to understand if we are alone. Don't worry about the fact that NASA says Earth is running out of water and Europa apparently they think has twice as much water.
In Europa, it almost certainly was completely independent from the origin of life on Earth. That would mean the origin of life must be pretty easy throughout the galaxy. And beyond.
And that's it. Actually, speaking about him now thinking life could be pretty easy, I did find a story out of MIT the other day where they're now looking to redefine the meaning of life, but maybe we'll take a look at that one tomorrow. I got way off of the topics I wanted to hit today, but whatever. It's called Sick Head. It's what happens. Your brain wanders. Anyway, so just pay attention to that. They're thinking that, yes, even though we don't have any money for all these space programs, that sending long-term probes starting in the 2020s, it says. NASA sent out spacecraft sometime in the 2020s, which will eventually make it to Jupiter a few years later and stay in orbit there. Europa might be where they are shooting for. At least that is my theory. All right, so let's get to the scary California news. So there's a couple stories that I saw over the last week or two that caught my attention, and I posted it a few times, and now I found a video. This is about the drought conditions in California, and they are claiming that California is sinking. I don't know if anybody has seen anything about this, but they're saying California is sinking, and it is because they are sucking all the water out of the ground. Now, I mean, I guess when you think about it, kind of makes sense, but how surprising is that, that California is sinking? Because that is not a good thing in any way, shape, or form. Maybe this will play. I don't know. This video was giving me problems earlier today. If not, I'll read the story that goes along with it. says homes in a Central Valley neighborhood are the latest casualty of California's historic drought never before seen. The parched, dry weather is causing them to literally sink into the ground. Homeowner Scott Hall was puzzled when he first noticed a small crack in his living room wall. Hold on, I'm going to kill Skype because this is not going to play. My wife and I were watching TV and we noticed a fine crack and you could see white starting to show up, said Hall. That small crack was part of a much bigger problem going on underground. His home was dropping. Quote, you could literally stand out by the sidewalk and look clear underneath the house into the backyard, said contractor Gary Wake. That's how much the soil had shrunk under his house. More and more homes have begun to tilt, sink, and crack in the neighborhood, and it has now become clear that the reason lies underground. Drought conditions have made the earth beneath them so parched, it is affecting the aquifer, the underground layer of permeable clay and soil, where the water normally flows. Quote, we honestly believe it has a lot to do with the drought and the aquifer just being sucked out, says Hall. And hey, hold on, there's a commercial playing, and as soon as this commercial's done, looks like this video is going to start. Hold the phone. All right, here we go.
See how bad our drought really is. It is literally causing homes to sink. Now, Brian, this is something we would expect to see when there was a lot of rain.
And it turns out to be something we expect when there's too little as well. It all started when some homeowners in the Central Valley noticed some cracks. Turns out there's a much bigger problem going on underground.
The wife and I were sitting here watching TV, and we noticed that there was a fine crack that you can see the white starting to show up.
It started with puzzled homeowners.
The crack back there, which I haven't painted just yet, that's just dropping. Which makes kind of sense because all the cracks are happening in there.
Then there were busy contractors.
We could literally stand out by the sidewalk and look clear underneath the house to the backyard. That's how the soil had shrunk under this house.
And as more homes tilt, sink, and crack, the prime suspect has been sighted underground.
It's just moving so fast now. So we honestly believe it has a lot to do with the drought and the aquifer just being sucked out.
When that clay soil starts shrinking and going away, the foundation follows, especially on the older homes.
Right now we're seeing subsidence at about 1 foot per year.
Hydrologist Michelle Sneed is tracking California's rate of descent for the USGS, and one area really stands out.
And this is on Highway 152, right near Los Banos.
It's called the El Nido Subsidence Zone. A chunk of the valley south of Merced that is sinking quickly. The brighter colors show you where it's sinking fastest, about a foot per year in this case.
Jeez.
So quickly that scientists are having trouble keeping up with it.
One other place that I can think of is sort of outpacing our rate of subsidence, and that's Mexico City.
Until now, the most visible sign of California's dry sinking valley was this broken concrete along the Delta Mendota Canal. But as this canal fails to meet the area's demands, the problem is increasingly hitting homes.
We're getting the calls of, can you come and adjust my doors? My doors won't shut.
I got another small crack that's taken off going towards the house there.
Those sinking houses, right across the street from an agriculture industry that's desperate for water, digging a record number of wells reaching ever deeper into a sinking water table. And this is one deficit that can't be erased by an El Nino winter.
See how it's nice and solid there?
Ooh, we need rain.
How horrifying is that? And so here we have California sinking. I mean, the joke used to be when I was a kid that someday California's going to fall into the ocean. But I mean, literally sections of the state are sinking at a foot per year. How is that going to figure in the next year or two? Your house sinks 3 feet. That's going to cause some problems, Clyde. So to add even more damning information to what's going on in California, check this one out. And now, of course, everything is spinning. Hold on. If this doesn't work, I gotta Let's get this other computer on. Log me in. Oh, I don't remember my password. Log me in. Oh, look, DNS probe. No internet found. Gotta love when that happens. All right, let's get it. Ah, here we go. This one came out of RT yesterday, and it loaded the headline when it didn't load the story. Hurry it up, people. Oh, it's not gonna happen. Here we go. Explosive helium leak. Now, we've heard all about the methane and the methane mass expulsion that is going on in the Pacific Ocean. The hydrates, I believe they are, that are at the bottom of the ocean where everything was kind of frozen in there. The permafrost is starting to all let loose and the methane is escaping from the ocean floor where it's been locked up for a really long time. But get this, explosive helium now leaking from deep earthquake fault zone in Southern California. New study. An American geologist has discovered high levels of explosive helium-3 leaking from Southern California's earthquake fault zone, which appeared deeper and more significant than previously thought, a new study shows. Isn't it amazing? All these new studies just coming out of nowhere with all this new information that we're just finding out, like everything is going to complete and utter shit. In a handbasket, just over the last, year. It's just amazing how this is happening. UC Santa Barbara geologist Jim Bowles has found that high levels of helium-3 have been leaking across a 30-mile stretch of the Newport-Inglewood fault zone in the Los Angeles Basin, L.A., people. He presented his findings in a new study recently published in Geochemistry, Geophysics, Geosystems, called G-Cubed, a journal of the American Geophysical Union and the Geochemical Society. Quote, "We show that the Newport-Inglewood Fault is not only deep-seated, but also directly or indirectly connected with the mantle," Bowles said, as cited by the university press release. He added that the findings indicate that the fault is a, quote, lot more important than previously thought, unquote, and that the results are unexpected for the area, never before seen again, because the LA Basin is different from where most mantle helium anomalies occur. Now, I don't know about you. I haven't paid a lot of attention to major geology since I took tons of geology in college, but I don't ever remember hearing about helium releases from underground. Could you imagine everyone in Los Angeles going to be talking all high and squeaky? This isn't cool. Typically before large earthquakes, you start seeing gas releases. That is one thing that I do remember. So the fact that we have helium-3, I mean, I don't really even know anything about helium-3, but it's all coming out of the ground in a subduction zone probably isn't a very good thing, especially considering the California sinking, too. All right, back to the story. After about 30 million years ago, the Pacific plate was colliding with the North American plate, which created a subduction zone at the Newport-Inglewood Fault, Bowles explains, and then somehow that intersection jumped clear over to the present San Andreas Fault, although how this occurred is not really known, after U.S. geologists from UC Santa Barbara analyzed 24 gas samples, they discovered that high levels of helium-3 inversely correlate with its carrier gas, carbon dioxide, which also came from the mantle. In addition, the geologists found bluesschist, a rock type that is of roughly basaltic composition with minerals at the bottom of nearby deep wells. And according to the study, it also indicates that the Newport-Inglewood Fault is an ancient subduction zone where two tectonic plates collide, even though its location is more than 40 miles west of the current plate boundary of the San Andreas Fault. Sorry, I had to remove along there. Now, as we've been seeing earthquakes all along the Pacific Rim, and there have been some big ones over the last year or two, even over the last 4 years, if you go back to the big Japanese earthquake that created the whole Fukushima debacle, extinction level debacle that's going on there. I'd be concerned if I lived in LA, that's for certain. Says this paper shows that the mantle is leaking more at the Newport-Inglewood Fault Zone than at the San Andreas Fault, which is a new discovery, says the author. The Newport-Inglewood Fault extends for 47 miles from Culver City southeast to Newport Beach and trends east-southeast into the Pacific Ocean. The fault is right lateral while its offset is predominantly horizontal parallel to the fault trace. I have no idea what that means. It does not form the plate boundary where the San Andreas Fault is a continental transform fault that forms the tectonic boundary between Pacific Plate and the North American Plate. The Newport-Inglewood Fault appears to sit on a 30-million-year-old subduction zone, so it's surprising that it maintains a significant pathway through the crust and one of the deadliest earthquakes. And that's what I thought was along the Newport-Inglewood Fault. It's the Long Beach earthquake, which occurred March 10th, 1933. It registered a magnitude 6.3, killed 115 people. It was pretty significant for 1933. I couldn't imagine what it would be now. It was also the second most deadly earthquake in California history after the San Francisco 1906 earthquake. I don't know, people. I mean, keep your eyes peeled. And all of this is happening as this global insanity has just kicked off. I didn't feel like dealing with any of that, but Greece is in default. And they told the IMF to go screw. So it should be interesting. Hold on to your pocketbooks tight. Put your teeth in. Also, to continue on, there was a link in here. It says California's big one could also trigger a super cycle of destructive earthquakes. So they think if one goes off, there's going to be a lot more that touches off along that entire fault line. So you know what? There's something at some point that's going to happen. Just be prepared for any of them. If you were in California, if I were in California, I would be very cognizant. I have friends in California, and they don't seem to be fazed by earthquakes at all. Because they do happen all the time, but typically on a smaller basis. But if you take a look, go out to the USGS and just look at the map. Look at the Pacific Rim. Look at where all the biggies have been all around that rim, and look at where all the volcanoes have come back to life. I definitely would be a little concerned about being in California. All right, where do we end the show? I don't know. It's been a rough week, guys. I don't know how I'm going to be able to do this on a daily basis with summer vacation here. There just isn't enough time in a day to do everything that needs to be done for the network and for all these other shows and my family, and then try and keep up on something interesting to talk about and do research every single night to do a research paper for you the next day. It's extremely and get some sleep and get better. I've been sick now for a week and a half. All right, we should end it with some sort of Google bots, I think. Google bots are always good. Let's see. Well, how about Google's AI bot thinks the purpose of life is to live forever? We couldn't have doubted anything less. Or wait, actually, this one's even better. if anything works. Again, it's the end of the show, so remember, the end of the show always gets trashed. Here, let's see if we can get to it on this other machine. Oh, mother, it logged me out of everything. And now I have no Deanna's probe. Oh, it just makes me so tired. They hope I give up. All right, here, I guess I'll have to get back out to the page and see what I can find. You know, I did have some newer news that I found today that we could hit. Let's take a look. Oh, yeah, here's something else. The NSA, did you see that? They just ruled that the NSA can now go back to collecting bulk spy records on all Americans, at least for the next 6 months, so they can ramp their program down to then ramp it all into the Freedom Act. So all the corporations that have now been pulled into the spy syndicate can get up and running and suck your records. Here, maybe I can do this from here. All right, I think we got it. There we go. All right, let's check this one out. Well, maybe not. Yep. I don't know. If it doesn't work, I could just sing for the next 5 or 6 minutes. Oh, look, both machines now giving me DNS probe finished, no internet. Isn't that incredible? It's incredible that Facebook loads, Skype loads with no internet, but I go to click on a story and that story can't load. Oh, it's just incredible how that happens. What are the chances? This, honestly, this is like suck-assed, biggest suck-assed shit I've ever seen. The internet is broken, people, and it's on a daily basis. I want to get out my baseball bat and beat the living shit out of these computers. And it's not my computers. This is that brand new computer that I don't even have any data on. This is like just to do things when the other machine decides that when I say keywords, it doesn't work. And now I have two machines that just don't work. One's wired, one's wireless, and just neither of them connect to anything that I want them to. Only the surveillance spy tools, Skype and Facebook. Yes. Oh, yes, look. Refresh 5 times. Nope, no internet on this machine. How curious. But look, we can, go to this page. Works just fine. Oh, what? Yes, go to this page and it works just fine, too. You just can't watch videos from news sources that have not been approved by the Ministry of Truth. All right, let's see if we can read this one. This is up from a few days ago. Damn good thing I always keep 32 tabs open. Oh, wait, here comes. What? Oh, this is so irritating. Like, beyond. You don't even know how irritating this is. Oh, it looks like it's trying.
Data collection is back. On Monday, the U.S. Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court ruled that the bulk collection of American citizens' data by the NSA can be resumed. RT's Marina Portnaya is live in New York for us with more. Marina, what is so significant about these court rulings?
Well, this is pretty significant given that the American public was told that the NSA lost its legal authority for bulk data collection when the Patriot Act expired on June 1st. Now, if our viewers remember, Section 15, 215, rather, of the Patriot Act allowed the National Security Agency to indiscriminately collect and store metadata from millions of Americans. At least that's what U.S. officials said. Now, on June 2nd, U.S. Congress replaced the Patriot Act with the Freedom Act, and most Americans presume that their personal phone data, such as the numbers people dial, how long their conversations last, and when the calls occurred, all of that information would no longer be collected and stored by the government. The Freedom Act was celebrated by many privacy advocates and the U.S. media as a victory for civil liberties. Now, the majority of Americans disapprove approved of the government's invasive surveillance practices, which were exposed by NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden. And in extending the NSA's authority to collect bulk data, the FISA court has now largely dismissed a federal appeals court that ruled last month that the NSA phone records program was illegal.
Now, did you hear that? The FISA court has now ruled. I didn't know the FISA court was ahead of any ancillary courts. I thought it was the Supreme Court that ruled that the NSA bulk data collection was illegal. But the FISA court came in and ruled that no, it wasn't illegal. Don't worry about it. We're going to give you 6 more months. I'm going to back that up just a little bit so you can hear that again.
Last month that the NSA phone records program was illegal. So, you know, just having this story come in light of the president's meeting with his Brazilian counterpart and how there's no love lost and how they trust one another and the Obama administration assured its allies they would no longer be spying on them. That's the same assurance the American public received in the past 30 days. And here we see that the NSA's bulk data collection is being extended.
Is this ruling, is this permanent or can this be at all challenged?
Well, so far, this isn't permanent. The FISA court has ruled that the NSA can resume bulk collection until November 29th.
So November, they've now given them an extension to resume bulk data collection until, I think she said November 29th, to give you guys time to fix, you know, any holes that are there, because you might miss another pesky internet radicalized under 21 kid in his basement becoming ISIS.
So that intelligence agencies have time to move to a new system in which phone records would stay in the hands of phone companies. A 6-month transition was hidden in the Freedom Act, and the justification is that the NSA needs time to switch over to a more limited and targeted surveillance system. Now,
Oh, boo-hoo. Poor NSA. So, yeah, they hit a 6-month switchover time in the Freedom Act bill.
Going forward after November, the NSA is supposed to request records from phone companies only as an as-needed basis after the agency obtains approval from the FISA court.
Isn't that amazing? Like, that's how it was always supposed to work according to the law. Like, when you get a warrant, then you can get the records, not just bulk data collect everybody. All right, guys, if you can believe it, we made it. There's only about 5 seconds left, so make sure you stick around. It is Wednesday. We have Josh up live at 6 p.m. Eastern. The boys from New York, Continued Condition at 8. Truth or Talk with April and Burstein at 9. And Anti-Media Radio with Nick and DB at 11. All right, guys, everyone have an awesome Wednesday. Yay!